history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, a program that reminds you, no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are some men and women around you with some incredible stories to tell. All we need to do is ask a few questions and take the time to listen. And we do that each week as we honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we don't forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along that journey, we learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, and many times inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. We're going to meet a 92-year-old today in Bakersfield, California, also known as the Oklahoma of California. And I think that'll be proven true today with Vernon Martin, because you are from Oklahoma, and your hometown near Tahlequah, which is the headquarters of the Cherokee Nation, Eldon, Oklahoma. I don't think I've ever met anyone from Eldon, Oklahoma. How big a place was that when you were growing up?
It had two stores, a sawmill, a cotton gin, and about 15 houses.
That's about it.
That was it. And a train station and a railroad that went through there.
All right. So it was a happening place.
Mm-hmm.
What was your childhood like that? Did you have a big family?
No. Well, yeah, I had six brothers and sisters. I had one sister and five brothers, and it was great. My dad was, he bought ties, railroad ties, and he also clerked at a great big store that sold everything. If you wanted to buy a cultivator, you could.
Mm.
Then he had a big blacksmith shop.
So I bet you grew up helping in that blacksmith shop.
Yeah. I didn't do much help, but I was always over there.
I bet you had to sweep the floor a few times.
No, it's dirt floor. I did one thing. I'll tell this. I was in the blacksmith shop, and we all went barefooted back then in the summertime. He had a hatchet laying up on a workbench, and I got it and set a block up. I was going to split that block, and I split my big toe open.
Oh, ouch.
So he put me on his shoulder and carried me home, which we just lived a block or so from there.
And where did you fit into that seven children progression there? Which one were you?
I was next to the last.
So you had some big brothers to toughen you up, huh?
Yeah, I had Earl and Jay and Paul, then Ruby, my sister, and then I, and then my brother Dennis.
All right. How many of you brothers ended up in World War II?
Earl and Paul and me. Earl was in the CBs, and I was in the airborne outfits eventually, and my brother was in the 14th Armored Division in Europe.
You didn't ever run into him, did you?
After the war, I went to Paris on a furlough, and I met a guy that out of the 14th Division, and I found out where he was in Germany. When we got back to my outfit there in Germany, I went to my first sergeant and told him I found my brother, and I'd like to go up and see him. And he said, well, we'll just go up there in the morning. So he got a Jeep, and we went up there and found him.
That had to be a highlight.
Yeah, it was. You know, they build the houses in front, and then they have a yard in the back.
Right.
And his outfit was, he was eating dinner or something whenever I went in. I walked through there and back, and he started to take a bite, and he looked up and saw me, and his mouth just flew open. I stayed up there two or three days with him, and then he got a Jeep and took me back to Heidelberg, Germany.
So you had a couple days with each other there. Here you'd both been in all kinds of situations, I'm sure, since you last seen each other. Did you guys trade some war stories there?
No. We talked about our family and back home, and we never talked about the war hardly.
But three boys went off to war, and all three came home. Your mama must have been doing some praying back home in Oklahoma.
I guess so, because we all got back.
Those growing up years, though, in Oklahoma. I mean, I've heard a lot of stories from guys who lived through the Great Depression, and some of them in that part of the country. And it sure sounded like a far cry from what most of us have known in recent years. What do you remember about those years and the way things were?
We never do about all the stuff we have now to buy. You had one pair of shoes a year, and you had maybe two or three pair of bib overalls and a couple of shirts, and that was your wardrobe.
Mm-hmm.
No, it was a real sparse life. you didn't know of all these things that we know of nowadays. How can you want something when you don't even know what it is?
Amen. Maybe we're better off not knowing. And at age 17, you know, people today, when you say the CCC, they don't know what you're talking about. But at this time, before World War II, this was a big investment domestically in America after the Depression, putting people to work, having these public service projects. What made you decide to sign up for that Civilian Conservation Corps?
Because my brother Paul, older than me, he went in it when he was 17 years old, and he stayed 5.5 years.
Wow.
I looked around. There was nothing for me to do, nothing to work. I joined the CC camps, and I got them to send me where I thought it was close. He was in Cortez, Colorado, and they sent me to Mesa Verde National Park, and I thought I could see him. But in the meantime, I'll tell this on him. Because he was so mean. What I mean, he just wouldn't take nothing off anybody. And being on a CC camp boy, they got first pick on the girls in Cortez and other places wherever they was. So the sheriff come out. My brother fought all the time, every time he went to town. And the sheriff came out and said, if you don't get Paul out of here, they're going to kill him. So he discharged Paul, and Paul went to my older brother, which lived in Valparaiso, Indiana. He could take a Caterpillar tractor all apart. He could take one of those tanks over there all apart, put it back together. That was the way they got him out of Cortez. Uh-huh. And then he joined the Army way before the war started.
And what about you? What were you doing up there at that camp?
The first thing I done was work in a National Park Service garage where they worked on the vehicles. And I was changing a tire with a tire iron and trying to get it off the wheel, the rim. And the devil slipped out and hit me in the mouth and knocked two teeth out.
Oh.
So I knew doing mechanic work wasn't going to be my line. So I got a job. I was guide in a national park. I'd take one or two parties down to this big Indian ruin there in Mesa Verde.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'd take 15 people or so down, but they trained me, the rangers did, what to say and all about the ruins, and I'd take these people down there and be sure they all got back up to the starting point and answer questions to them and everything.
Well, and I've had a lot of guys tell me over the years that, you know, being in a CCC camp prepared them for the Army, that there was some discipline and kind of a military style execution to it that was going to get them ready for what they eventually did. Did you have that experience?
I sure did. In the mornings, we got up just in time to get down for breakfast, but at night we had flag lowering and all that stuff. Had to dress in Class A uniform and all that. When I first went in, we had a first lieutenant as our commanding officer, and it was all run just like the Army.
And is that where you were on December 7th? 1941?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're at that camp?
Uh-huh.
How'd you hear the news?
Sunday morning, I got up, and the time difference between over there in Hawaii and Mesa Verde, well, we got the news about 12 o'clock.
Uh-huh.
And I got up and looked out, and there's a whole bunch of my buddies gathered around the door going into the mess hall. So I hurried on down there. Our commanding officer was telling about the Japanese bombing Pearl Harbor. And that's where I first heard it.
Was that a shocker to you? Was that kind of hard to digest?
No. Being stupid, you know, but not knowing world affairs or anything, it didn't worry me much. But I cared. I didn't like people jumping on to us.
And your brother was already in the service.
Uh-huh.
So you knew he's going to be involved in this.
Yeah.
When did you decide, hey, it's going to happen to me too, I'm going to be part of this?
Well, now this is getting into my private life. My girlfriend, I knew her since we was 9 years old. She was just born and raised 2 miles up the creek from me. I went with her all the time until I was 17. I went to the CC camps, and I wrote her 2 letters in a year while I was gone. But anyhow, when I got back, why, she was still not married. She was 17, and I was 18 by then. Her picture's over there. She's such a pretty woman. Her blonde hair and all that.
Uh-huh.
And she had so many boyfriends, you had to stand in line to get a date with her. But anyhow, I went to town. Everybody went to town on Saturdays, especially all of the two high schools. kids that went to the high school there. And so I rode a bus over there, and I got off this bus and started walking up toward Oklahoma State University, big campus up there. And here come Elsie and JB, my best friend, walking down the sidewalk. And he said, "Well, here comes Vernon. I won't get to go with you anymore." And he never did. Elsie never went with any, and after I got back, she never went with any of her boyfriends that I knew of.
He knew right there and then he couldn't compete with you?
I guess so.
So did you get married before you went over?
Yeah, I got back in August and I went with her till we got married on the 20th of December. I come back in August and we got married on 20th of December.
And when did you go in the Army?
I stayed as long as I could.
Well, I'm sure you just got married. Who wouldn't want to stay?
So they drafted me and they sent me to Fort Sill. I got 22 weeks of basic training there in the PAC artillery. In other words, I think maybe a battalion would have like 15 mules in my section. Huh. And then they had four sections, so that's 60 mules. Plus, we had a maintenance section, and they had about 20 mules. We had nearly 100 mules in each battery. I took training in that there, and they sent me to the 10th Mountain Division in Camp Hale, Colorado, 10,000 feet elevation. And we had mules up there, too. And up at the mule barns, why, the first sergeant come out and said, "Anybody that will volunteer to go overseas can be sent to Paso Robles, California at Camp Roberts," because that outfit was getting ready to, they'd been to Kiska and they was getting ready to go over to Europe. You know, living in a place where it's 10 below zero at 10,000 feet elevation, sleeping out on the snow and on a mani, what we called a 6x4 canvas, piece of canvas, they'd lay that down and put you sleeping bag. You had two sleeping bags, put one inside the other and sleep on that snow. And I didn't like that very much. So the first sergeant came up and said, "Anybody that will volunteer to go overseas can be shipped to Paso Robles."
So you would rather go overseas and get in combat than be stuck at Camp Hale?
Right.
All right.
That's how I went overseas.
How'd your wife feel about that?
I never told her. Well, later I did.
Yeah. And when you were there at Camp Hale, did you go through those big maneuvers they had there?
Yeah. I was in the mules, and they all rode skis.
Right. But you never did that. You'd have to lead a mule-drawn piece of artillery up the snowy slopes.
Yeah. They had what they call Phillips pack saddles, that each saddle was designed for one piece of this artillery. That mule carried that. That was his load. The heaviest load of the whole gun was 235 pounds, which the mule carried, and the saddle weighed 95 pounds, and that was the load on the mule.
I'm just curious, have you ever been talking to someone and told them what you did in World War II and gotten a funny look like they had no idea that mules were used in World War II?
Yeah, lots of times.
That's kind of a unique distinction. A lot of people don't even know that and probably don't even believe you sometimes.
Well, I'll tell you, we called them Missouri mules that we had in Camp Hale. They were larger than the regular mule because they've special picked for this operation. You took them in there and you tied them, and they had a halter on you. You just snapped it in there. But you couldn't walk back out to the walkway, because if you did, he'd put you on the other side of the barn.
He'd kick you?
Kick you. He would, or bite you, or anything he could do.
Did you learn that the hard way, or by other guys learning the hard way?
They told me what to do. So you'd get at the door where you come in, you'd get up on the manger and walk back to where you were assigned a mule. And you'd walk back to this mule, and you'd unsnap the cord that was holding him, and then you'd back him out of the stall, never get behind him, because if you did, you got kicked.
Uh-huh.
This first sergeant, little bitty guy, but he was really hard-crusted. So he came up to where we was at the mule barn, and that's where I volunteered to go overseas.
Did it occur to you at all that you might be putting yourself in greater danger by doing that?
Well, when you're just 18, you don't think you could ever anything happen to you. I don't know where other people feel like that. I've heard them say, you don't think anything's going to happen to you.
You never thought, man, I'm going to leave behind a teenage widow?
Yeah, I never thought of that. But anyhow, the guys I took basic training with in Fort Sill, I told them what I was going to do. And Brown and Late and a couple of three more of my good friends, they ran right over and volunteered to go just because we was together.
It's time for our first break, but when we come back, we're going to hear about Mr. Martin's experiences with the 602nd Field Artillery Battalion. Mules, gliders, who knows where his story might take us. Check out the photos of him then and now on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page or at hometownheroesradio.com. And we'll be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right, consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.